Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Recently, three members of the VOA Learning English staff traveled along one of the most famous roadways in the United States, Route 66. They began their journey in the city of Chicago. Ashley Thompson and Katie Weaver have more on the Windy City.
Few Americans pay attention to a brown street sign on East Adams Street in downtown Chicago. If you are not looking for it, it is easy to ignore. But every few minutes, a group of international tourists take a picture in front of the sign. It reads, Historic Route, Illinois, U.S. 66, begin. The sign marks the modern-day starting point of an iconic American journey. The historic U.S. Route 66, the main street of America.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it.
Chicago is the largest city in the U.S. Midwest and the third largest city in the country. It is more famous for its pizza, museums, and skyscrapers than its place in Route 66 history. The 3,900-kilometer Route 66 links two of the biggest cities in the U.S., Chicago, Illinois in the east, and Los Angeles, California in the west. For people traveling Route 66 today, Chicago offers big city fun before beginning the drive through cornfields and small towns in Illinois. Before the Route 66 VOA crew headed west, we took in some of the sights, sounds, and tastes Chicago has to offer.
If you like tall buildings and interesting architecture, Chicago is the city for you. Skyscrapers were born in Chicago. The first one went up in 1885 and was only about 33 meters tall. One of the most famous skyscrapers in Chicago is the Willis Tower. The building is more commonly known by its original name, the Sears Tower. For years, it was the tallest building in the world. It remains one of the tallest buildings in the United States. Completed in 1973, it has 103 stories and stands 527 meters tall. Its observation deck provides amazing views of the city's downtown and beyond. Chicago's downtown is called the Loop. Chicago's train system, the L, circles this part of the city, giving the area its name. L stands for elevated. The train tracks run several meters above Chicago's streets. The public transportation system is a Chicago icon. More than 700,000 people board the trains every weekday. The Loop is also home to one of the largest outdoor sculptures in the world. British artist Anish Kapoor created the 10-ton sculpture, officially named Cloudgate. The huge metal rounded object is often and affectionately called the Bean. It is a beloved selfie spot because photographers can see themselves in the mirror-like surface of the bean. One way to end a day of exploring Chicago's museums, parks, and architecture is by eating at one of the city's exceptional pizzerias.
Chicago-style pizza is very different than the pizza from other American cities. It is more cheese than crust. Tomato sauce covers the top of the pizza, and it is truly more of a pie than a typical pizza. It is served in a deep, round plate. In fact, Chicago's pizza is called deep dish pizza. One of the first Chicago-style pizzerias opened in 1943. Two entrepreneurs opened Pizzeria Uno with the goal of creating a uniquely American version of pizza. The history of just who created Chicago deep dish is a bit controversial. Some say the entrepreneurs themselves were the inventors. Others give credit to one very famous Chicago clan. Lou Malnati was one of the original Pizzeria Uno cooks. He claimed that he came up with the Chicago deep dish pizza. He continued to work at Pizzeria Uno for many years without getting the credit he felt he deserved. But in 1971, he and his family took their pizza baking skills and opened their own restaurant. Lou Malnati's pizzeria now has 35 locations throughout Chicago and its suburbs. One of Lou Malnati's downtown locations is a quick walk away from another Chicago institution, Jazz Showcase.
If the Windy City, as Chicago is known, had a soundtrack, the music would have to be jazz and blues. The city is famous for the all-American sounds. Jazz and blues clubs are scattered throughout the town. Jazz Showcase is among the best of them. The historic club opened up in 1947. It is the oldest continuously operating jazz club in Chicago. Some of jazz's greatest musicians have played there, including Count Basie and Art Blakey. On our first night in Chicago, we visited Jazz Showcase. The club was intimate and low-lit. Pictures and murals of famous faces cover the walls. The crowd was warm and friendly, like most everyone in this Midwestern city. The Ari Brown Quartet was performing a free show. The place was packed with jazz enthusiasts. At one point, the lead saxophonist brought up a jazz singer who happened to be in the audience. She shared the stage for a song and received huge applause.
Chicago is not a typical Route 66 city. Aside from the official start and end signs, it can be difficult to find particular Route 66 sites in the city. Our journey west began the next morning. We turned off of Michigan Avenue, Chicago's most famous street, and on to East Adams. Soon, the skyscrapers gave way to the open land and small towns that define Route 66. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver. Join us next week for a report about international tourism along historic Route 66.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Myanmar will hold elections November 8th. It will be the first general election in 25 years for the country, also known as Burma. A nominally civilian government took power in 2011, but the armed forces remain firmly in control of the political process. Aung San Suu Kyi heads the main opposition party, the National League for Democracy. She has called on international observers to become actively involved in the election process. The European Union says it will have 30 long-term observers in Myanmar during the election. The EU said it will deploy more than 60 short-term observers across the country. The American-based Carter Center also is sending election observers. The National League for Democracy won 43 seats in parliamentary by-elections in 2012. The party won the general elections in 1990, but the country's military rulers ignored the results. This week, an NLD campaign rally in Yangon was attacked, leaving a local lawmaker and two other men injured. Officials said several men armed with knives attacked the gathering. The attack is likely to raise fears of violence before the general election. On Thursday, a United Nations human rights investigator called for the elections to be inclusive, free, and credible. UN Special Rapporteur Yang He Lee expressed concern that universal rights, such as freedom of expression, assembly, and association, have been restricted. She also noted religious discrimination. She said that many Muslim voters and candidates have been barred from the election. Yang He Lee said the largest number of excluded candidates is from Rakhine State. Among voters, she said, nearly 800,000 people who had the right to vote in the 2010 and 2012 elections are not permitted to vote this year. She said they were told their temporary registration documents are no longer accepted. This includes many people of Chinese or Indian ancestry, but mainly Rohingya from Rakhine State. More than 100,000 Muslims from the Rohingya minority have been living in camps after religious violence in Rakhine State. Tens of thousands of Rohingya are believed to have fled the country by boat. Earlier this year, President Thein Sein canceled the voting rights of all Rohingya. United States officials say the government in Myanmar has promised the vote will be free and fair. U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes met with reporters in Yangon last week. He spoke about his meetings with Myanmar officials, political parties, and civil society groups. Rhodes said he was satisfied with the answers he was given at those talks. He said the U.S. government is hopeful the election results will be honored. But he warned the government will be forced to re-examine its position if the results are not respected.
Clearly, that would represent a step backwards, and we would have to make assessments about our policies and our engagement in response to something like that.
And that's In the News. I'm Mario Ritter.
¶¶ the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. I'm Pat Bodner. October 31st is Halloween. In the spirit of this ancient holiday, we present a story written by Special English reporter and producer Katie Weaver. It's called The Boy on Gravesend Road.
Kelly Ryan was making dinner. Her 10-year-old son, Benjamin, was watching television in the living room. Or at least she thought he was.
Benny boy, do you want black beans or red beans?
Red beans,
oh,
Mama.
Don't do that, Ben. You scared me half to death. You're gonna get it.
Ben had come up quietly right behind her.
Oh, I'll get back to you, you stinker.
Kelly goes to the phone, but as soon as she lays her hand on it, the ringing stops.
How strange. Oh, the beans.
Kelly turns her attention back to cooking. As soon as she does, the phone rings again.
Honey, can you get that?
Hello? Oh, hi. Yes, I remember. Sure, it sounds fun. Let me ask my mom. Can you hold? She might want to talk to your mom. Okay. See you tomorrow.
Ben, your rice and beans are on the table. Let's eat. So, what was that call about?
That was Wallace Gray. You know him from class?
Mm-hmm.
He wants to play tomorrow. Can I go home with him after school? Please, Mom, I get bored around here waiting for you after work.
But I don't even know his parents. Maybe I should talk to them.
You can't, Mom. He was with his babysitter. He said his parents wouldn't be home until late tonight, and they would leave before he went to school in the morning. Please, Mom, Wallace lives right over on Gravesend Road. It's a 5-minute walk from here. Please?
Well, okay. What's so great about this guy anyway? You've got a ton of friends to play with.
I know, but Wallace is just different. He's got a lot of imagination.
The school week passes, and Ben starts to go home almost every day with Wallace. Kelly notices a change in her son. He seems tired and withdrawn. His eyes do not seem to really look at her. They seem lifeless. On Friday night, she decides they need to have a talk.
Sweetie, what's going on with you? You seem so tired and far away. Is something wrong? Did you and your new friend have a fight?
No, Mom. We've been having a great time. There's nothing wrong with us. Why don't you like Wallace? You don't even know him, but you don't trust him.
Benjamin, what are you talking about? I don't dislike Wallace. You're right, I don't know him. You just don't seem like yourself. You've been very quiet the past few nights.
I'm sorry, Mom. I guess I'm just tired. I have a great time with Wallace. We play games like cops and robbers. But they seem so real that half the time I feel like I'm in another world. It's hard to explain. It's like...
I think the word you're looking for is intense?
Yeah, that's it. It's intense.
Well, tell me about today. What kind of game did you play?
We were train robbers, or Wallace was. I was the station manager. Wallace was running through a long train from car to car. He had stolen a lot of money and gold from the passengers. I was chasing right behind him, moving as fast as I could. Finally, he jumps out of the train into the station to make his escape. But I block his path. He grabs a woman on the station platform. She screams, "No, no!" But he yells, "Let me through or she dies." So I let him go.
What happened then?
Well, that's what was weird and, like you said, intense. Wallace threw the lady onto the tracks and laughed. He said that's what evil characters do in the games. They always do the worst.
Later, after Ben went to bed, Kelly turned on the 11 o'clock news. She was only half listening as she prepared a list of things to do the next day on Halloween.
Okay, let's see. Grocery shopping, Halloween decorating. Oh, the dog's got to go to the groomer. I've got to go to the hardware store, clean up the garden, and then...
Instantly.
Reports say it appears she was pushed off the station platform into the path of the oncoming train.
No.
It happened during rush hour today. Some witnesses reported seeing two boys running and playing near the woman. But police say they did not see any images like that on security cameras at the station.
No.
In other
it
news,
can't be. The station is an hour away. They couldn't have gotten there.
The
How
power
could they? It's just a coincidence.
The wind blew low and lonely that night. Kelly slept little. She dreamed she was waiting for Ben at a train station. Then she saw him on the other side, running with another little boy. It must be Wallace, she thought. The little boy went in and out of view. Then, all of a sudden, he stopped and looked across the tracks directly at her. He had no face. Saturday morning was bright and sunny, a cool October day. Kelly made Ben eggs and toast and watched him eat happily.
You know, Benny boy, a woman did get hurt at the train station yesterday. She actually got hit by a train. Isn't that strange?
She looked at Ben.
What do you mean, Mom?
Well, you and Wallace were playing that game yesterday about being at a train station. You said he threw a woman off the platform and she was killed by a train.
Kelly felt like a fool, even saying the words. She was speaking to a 10-year-old who had been playing an imaginary game with another 10-year-old. What was she thinking?
I said we played that yesterday. I did? No, we played that a few days ago, I think. It was just a really good game. Really intense. Yesterday, we played pirates. I got to be Captain Frank on the pirate ship, the Arg. Wallace was Davy, the first mate, but he tried to rebel and take over the ship, so I made him walk the plank. Davy walked off into the sea and drowned. Wallace told me I had to order him to walk the plank. He said that's what evil pirates do.
Well, I guess he's right. I don't know any pirates, but I do hear they're pretty evil.
So can I play with Wallace today when you are doing your errands? Please, Mom? I don't want to go shopping and putting up Halloween decorations.
Oh, whatever. I guess so. I'll pick you up at Wallace's house at about 5:30 so you can get ready for trick-or-treating. Where does he live again?
Gravesend Road. I don't know the street number, but there are only two houses on each side. His is the second one on the left.
Okay, I can find that easy enough. Do you still want me to pick up a ghost costume for you?
Yep. Oh, and guess what, Mom? Wallace says he's a ghost, too. I suppose we'll haunt the neighborhood together.
Everywhere Kelly went that day was crowded. She spent an hour and a half just at the market. When she got home, decorating the house for Halloween was difficult. But finally, she had it all up the way she wanted.
Oh, gosh, it's 5 already. I don't even have Ben's costume.
She jumped into her car and drove to Wilson Boulevard. The party store was just a few blocks away. Kelly soon found the ghost costume that Ben wanted. She bought it and walked out of the store.
Hey, Kelly, long time no see. How's Benjamin doing?
Eileen, wow, it's great to see you. How's Matt? We've been so busy since the school year started, we haven't seen anyone.
Oh, Matt's good. I mean, he broke his arm last month, So no sports for him. It is driving him crazy. But at least he's got a lot of time for school now.
That's good, yeah.
Anyway, Matt was wondering why Benny Boy never comes by anymore. We saw him running around the neighborhood after school last week. It looks like he's having fun, but he's always alone. We don't need to set up a play date. Ben should know that. You just tell him to come by anytime.
Wait a minute. Alone? What do you mean alone? He started playing with a new friend, a Wallace somebody, after school. Like, every day this past week. Ben hasn't been alone. Wallace Gray, that's it. Do you know him? Does Matt?
Oh, Kelly, I'm sure he's a fine kid. I don't know him, but don't worry. Ben's got great taste in friends. We know that. I'm sure he really wasn't alone. He was probably just playing hide-and-seek or something. I didn't mean to worry you. I guess everybody's on edge because of what happened to the Godwin boy this morning.
Kelly suddenly felt cold and scared. What Godwin boy? And what happened to him? She was not sure she wanted to know, but she had to ask.
Frank Godwin's youngest boy, Davy, the 5-year-old. You know Frank. We call him Captain. He used to be a ship captain. Well, this morning, the rescue squad found Davy in Blackheart Lake. They also found a little toy boat that his dad had made for him. Davy and his dad named it the Arg. Davy must have been trying to sail it. It's so sad.
Wait, he's dead?
Yes, Davy drowned.
Where's Blackheart Lake?
It's right off Gravesend Road, right behind that little cemetery. That's why they call it Gravesend. Kelly, where are you going?
I've got to get Benjamin.
Kelly raced down Main Street. She had no idea who Wallace Gray was or how he was involved in any of this. But she did not trust him, and she knew her child was in danger. Finally, she was at Gravesend Road.
Only 2 houses on each side.
She remembered what Ben had told her.
Right behind that little cemetery.
And what Eileen had told her. Kelly got out of the car and walked down the street. She looked around.
The second one on the left.
She could see the lake. Some fog was coming up as the sky darkened on this Halloween night. But there was no second house. Instead, what lay before her was grass and large white stones. The cemetery. Kelly walked through the gate into the yard of graves.
Ben?
No answer. She kept walking.
Ben, answer me. I know you're here.
Again, no answer. But the wind blew and some leaves began to dance around a headstone. Kelly walked slowly toward the grave. Suddenly, the sky blackened, so dark she could not see anything. She felt a force pushing at her. It tried to push her away from the grave. But she knew she had to stay.
Benjamin, Owen, Orr, this is your mother. Come out this second.
No one answered, except for the sound of the blowing wind. The darkness lifted. Silvery moonlight shone down directly onto the old gravestone in front of her. But Kelly already knew whose name she would see.
Wallace Gray. October 31st, 1900 to October 31st, 1910. Some are best when laid to rest.
Kelly took a deep breath, then...
Wallace Gray, this play date is over! Give me back my son! Wallace, you are in time out!
Suddenly, the ground shoots upward like a small volcano. Soil, sticks, and worms fly over Kelly's head and rain down again, followed by her son, who lands beside her.
Ben! Ben!
Mom? Mom, are you there? I can't see. All this dirt in my eyes.
Ben, I'm here. I'm here, baby. Right here. Oh, sweet Benny boy. Can you breathe? Are you really okay? What happened? How long were you in there?
I don't know, Mom, but I didn't like it. I didn't like where Wallace lives. I want to go home.
Oh, me too, sweetie. Come on. Ben, put your arm around me. Come on.
Mom, one more thing.
What is it, Ben?
I don't want to be a ghost for Halloween.
Our story, The Boy on Gravesend Road, was written and produced by Katie Weaver. The voices were Andrew Bracken, Faith Lapidus, Catherine Cole, Shirley Griffith, and Jim Tedder. I'm Pat Bodner. Join us again next week for another American story in VOA Special English.